Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Tom Woods Show, episode 2393. I could not be more delighted to welcome Dr. Joseph Latipo to the program. He is Surgeon General of Florida and a professor of medicine at the University of Florida. He has credentials as long as my arm. He graduated from Wake Forest, got his medical degree from Harvard, and his PhD in health policy from the Harvard Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. He completed his clinical training in internal medicine at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, where he received the Harvard Medical School Class of 2012 Resident Teaching Award and the Daniel E. Ford Award in Health Services and Outcomes Research from Johns Hopkins University. And we're going to talk a bit about his book, Transcend Fear, A Blueprint for Mindful Leadership in Public Health. So, Dr. Latipo, thank you very much for being here.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
All right, I have a bit of a provocative opening, and that is I'm going to read two sentences from your Wikipedia entry. You ready?
Oh, can't wait.
Okay, so we read this. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Latipo promoted unproven treatments, opposed vaccine and mask mandates, questioned the safety of COVID-19 vaccines, and spread miscellaneous falsehoods, none of these are listed, by the way, contradicting professional medical organizations. Latipo has also opposed gender-affirming care and counseling for transgender and non-binary minors. Now, I'm supposed to look at that and say, oh, no, good heavens, I better not listen to him. But instead, I read that and I think he sounds like a great guy.
Great, yeah. I'm glad you do. And hopefully people, I definitely believe more and more people are seeing are appreciating these people that are trying to make you or somehow convince you that what they're saying is correct, rather than just providing you with information and letting you make up your mind about what you think is correct. So,
well,
those are benign lines in the wiki. I'm sure it gets more interesting than that. They should be able to do better than that.
But I've sometimes done this. I'll have a controversial guest and I'll read the Wikipedia and just say, how do you respond to this? I mean, what kind of a crazy world are we living in that they would accuse you of falsehood, exactly the same people who have done nothing but mislead for years on end, and they're going to condemn you for falsehoods?
I know. Yeah, totally right. Never mind how they tried to convince you that children needed to wear masks somehow to save their lives and everyone else, or that the children needed these new experimental vaccines, or that you needed 8 of them. I mean, actually right now it's a subscription plan, right? It's like, you know, how just the number you get depends on how many years of life you live, right? It's just so perverse, right? They literally, it's like that meme of someone beating someone else up and telling them to stop hitting me, and they're the one doing the beating.
Yeah, no kidding. Now look, I'll just say what I guess my listeners probably know already. I've been a fan of Ron DeSantis and the way he handled all this. And I write a daily newsletter, and I wrote it primarily on this topic for 2 years because what else was there to write about? And just constantly, I felt like I was reporting a lot on what was going on in Florida. And then, of course, you got brought on. And I think in your book, the story is very interesting. In fact, let's stop there. Let's just go back. We'll get to DeSantis later. So you were at UCLA, and you had moved into a new house not 2 weeks before you were approached with the offer to be Surgeon General of Florida, or at least be interviewed for it?
It's crazy, yeah. The pandemic, as we all know, was such a disruptive force, and not so much the virus. Obviously, the virus had a huge impact on people who became severely ill or died or had loved ones who died. But the policies affected every single person, and people were reorganizing their lives left and right. They were moving, they were moving out to different states. They were moving to different homes. They were looking for backyards. They were looking for areas that were more in touch with nature. And we were part of that. We have 3 boys, and Los Angeles County School District, LAUSD, Los Angeles United School District, wouldn't let them go to school at first, and then wouldn't let them go to school without testing and mask. And there's only expletives for that. My wife and I were never going to go along with that evil agenda. So we had them in a condo in LA because it takes millions of dollars to be able to afford anything resembling a house in West LA. And as this pandemic was just stretching on, we started looking for both houses further out and for rental properties that were houses. And we landed on one in Brentwood, great house, backyard. And we enjoyed it for a few weeks before we moved to Florida.
So I guess what happened was you got emailed and then you responded, but it was somehow still in your drafts folder. So they must have thought, boy, this guy's a tough sell. I guess we'll have to call him on the phone. So you get a call on the phone. And then before you know it, you're interviewing with Ron DeSantis. What was that like?
It was fun. It was fun. So at that time, his chief of staff was Adrian Lucas. And it was Governor DeSantis and Adrian sitting in a room. And we were chatting, some video software we were using. It was fun. You know, it was fun. I mean, you remember, of course, back, this is fall of 2021. So Governor DeSantis, I mean, he was waist deep in fighting with all of these forces that were trying to pummel him with their COVID ideology and all these media forces and all these other forces. So he was in a jovial mood during the interview, and we had a good interview. We hit it off, and we have a very, very good working connection. We both just, our vibe just works well together. And I think maybe it was the next day or so, I got the next call saying that we were being offered the position, that he was offering me the position. So yeah, life changed at that point.
Well, I was at an event that the governor had. It was at the conclusion of that event that you announced that Florida would recommend against the shots for healthy children. So it might have been, maybe it was February of last year, something like that. And it was a round table and there were television screens for people who were being beamed in from other places. And it was, I guess the idea behind it was, especially because of the Ukraine issue, there was a fear that everything that had been done to the country was just going to be swept under the rug and we were just going to forget all about it. And the thinking was we need to have some accountability. So there were about a half dozen of us there who were brought in just because we were like opinion molders or something and had big Twitter followings. And we were asked if we wanted to live tweet it, which I happily did. But one of the things I noticed was the camaraderie between the two of you guys. Like you were just laughing and joking together the whole time. And he said, I don't know if you were around when he said it, but DeSantis said that he never has to check up on you whether you're doing your work. All he has to do is look in the newspapers. And if there are negative headlines, he knows you're hard at work.
I remember when he said that. Yeah, yeah. So I must be doing a really good job. And I actually really want to do an even better job. So, yeah, we definitely have a good working relationship. We have very compatible working and thinking styles about problems and approaching problems. And he's very sensible and down to earth. And I'm sensible and down to earth. So a lot of these issues that there's been all this wringing of the hands over the last few years, they're not actually that complicated. The schools, that was not a complicated issue. The lockdowns, that was absolutely not a complicated issue. And these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, it's not a complicated issue. There's just so much investment in achieving a certain outcome that people who are intelligent but are making decisions that are bad for humanity and bad for people are finding themselves doing all these gymnastics and twists and turns to try and convince people to go down paths that are harmful.
I've lived in Florida. I live in St. Cloud, which is sort of between Melbourne and Orlando. And we moved here about 7 years ago, so it had nothing to do with COVID. But I mean, what a great coincidence that we happened to be here at that time, because it meant that my five daughters could still have normal lives, relatively speaking. And I'm happy about that, especially compared to what I know a lot of people went through in other parts of the country. But I remember, so I've been following this very closely, following the Florida situation very closely. And I remember one time, maybe multiple times, but I remember reading that you were recommending during COVID times, which I guess we've been here since 2021, so it's all been COVID, but you were recommending that people think about physical fitness, good diet, vitamin D. And I thought, I bet this is the only state surgeon general saying what ought to be obvious to everybody, but it's everybody else, it was fear and injections and whatever. And you were saying, well, you know, if you want to help keep your body strong and be able to resist things like this, here are some things you might think about doing that'll serve you well anyway.
Totally. Absolutely. And it's just a reflection of the madness of that time, that people were defining health in terms of the number of injections you took or what type of mask you were. That's not health. Health is something that we actually have a lot of control of, and we really should take responsibility for it. We only get one body, and the decisions, it's indisputable that the decisions we make affect what happens with our bodies in terms of wellness and illness and pain and endurance and just energy and how we feel and how our lives go. So it's getting back to the basics, which was completely absent during the pandemic, was so important then, and it's still so important now. You know, there's just so much more we need to do to help support people getting away from paths that are not serving them, particularly what we put in our food and how inactive some people are, to really putting more good things in your food, being more physically active, taking more responsibility and ownership for your health. I mean, it serves you better. It serves the world better. It serves everyone better.
I want to ask you a question that I asked Peter McCullough. I said to him, if this were 2019 and I asked you, what concerns do you have about the state of American medicine? I want to know what your answer would have been in 2019. But I'd also like to know what your answer is in 2023, having lived through these past few years, and how much your answer has changed. So how would you answer that?
So I actually had the pleasure of seeing Peter a few days ago. He's a good friend, and we were at a conference together. I love the guy. That is such a great question. For me, in 2019, I was actually completely part of the mainstream, hook, line, sinker, really went along with how generally people were thinking in medicine. I talk about it more in my book, but I worked with a Navy SEAL for a few days, for 5 days in December of 2019, and that changed everything for me. I worked with him to help rid my body, my mind, my soul of 98% of the stress and trauma and fear that I was carrying around in my body. So when all that left, my perspective completely changed. So really, honestly, in 2019, what I would say is just not very imaginative. I mean, I probably would have said something about rising drug costs, or I would have said something about, you know, I may have said something about people not taking medications that professional societies recommended based on studies that have been done. For example, one of my projects while I was at UCLA, one of my NIH grants was a study on increasing statin use. A lot of people are on statins, Lipitor, Crestor, all that stuff, in people with HIV. That was one of my studies. It wasn't, we talked about exercise, but it really wasn't about exercise or eating healthy. It was about drugs. So I would have had a very uninspiring answer in 2019. And frankly, an inaccurate answer. Now, ask me now, the biggest problem in healthcare is the disconnection or the misdefinition or misunderstanding of what health really is and what the components of health really are. So much disease is preventable, and we don't think as healthcare providers from that perspective. It really is a cultural shift that we need to help people really stay on a path more prevention and less of all of this prescribing. We do way too much of it. And frankly, there are studies that show that we do too much of it. You know, there are patients who take drugs that sometimes the lists are so long that they don't even know why they're taking some of the drugs. And when we prescribe them, we don't know that they're actually doing what we think they're doing. So I think that disconnection from real health is the biggest problem in healthcare. And certainly we feel the effects in the general population.
Do you think that there's a problem, that problems result from the money at the disposal of the NIH? Do you think that that skews research in particular directions and away from other directions?
There's no question. That is a fact. And it's funny because, as I mentioned, so when I was at UCLA, I had, at the time I left, I think I had 4 ongoing NIH trials. I was a very successful professor. And I was part of the ecosystem. I was part of the system in terms of NIH will often put out what we call a request for applications, RFAs. And requests for applications are these documents that describe some health problem and components of the health problem and their invitations for investigators, for researchers, for professors to submit applications in response to those in the hopes of receiving funding. So I was all part of that. And I'm still part of it to some extent because I still have ongoing grants. But you look at what happened in the pandemic and you look at people like Dr. Anthony Fauci. You look at so many of my colleagues. You look at how they went along and encouraged. And Dr. Fauci's still encouraging people wearing masks. You know, and he's making stuff up now. He's calling it individual protection, even though large studies have shown there's not shown a benefit in terms of the Cochrane review, for example. So there is corruption in terms of the gap or the mixture, actually, between the beauty of science and political outlook, right? So political outlook is how now there's more money being steered toward things like ideas about equity rather than just reducing health disparities, which is a wonderful thing. In contrast, this idea of equity is this whole encompassing thing that goes way outside the domains of health. You look at things like gender dysphoria. You look at things like what's happened with COVID treatments. So, and really incredibly inadequate funding of clinical trials early in the pandemic, when it would have made the biggest difference to test a bunch of different drugs to see what was effective. So absolutely, there's an enormous problem, and it's because political outlook or political ideology is so tightly intertwined with science right now. It's such an unfortunate problem.
I can't help noting, I was quite startled reading your book. So the book is Transcend Fear. Of course, I thought that you were going to talk about the COVID crisis and how we needed to transcend fear. And indeed, you did. But the real story of fear is from your own personal life. And the vulnerability you show in this book is almost off the charts in terms of a public official. I don't think I've ever seen anybody be so frank about his own personal struggles, starting with his childhood on into his relationship, in his marriage. You were extremely frank and blunt, but in order to draw a lesson from all these things.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I feel like I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I walked around for 41 years carrying accumulated stress, accumulated trauma. We all do, by the way. I mean, there was nothing, we're all unique in that the way that our bodies respond and our minds and our spirits and our energy responds to different stresses and traumas. It's always unique. And we all also have epigenetic history, and there are components of our ancestry that, as wild as it sounds, and I didn't believe any of this until I worked with Christopher Maher in December of 2019, but there are components of even our ancestry that affect who we are and our relationship with an integration of stress, how it affects us. And so I fell in love with my wife and just had this eruption of this childhood sexual trauma that I had that I thought had not affected me, but in fact severely affected me. It had stunted my, or really frozen my ability emotionally to connect with other people and lots of other stuff. So I eventually ended up working with Christopher Maher. My wife demanded it actually, just because I was driving her nuts with all my problems. And that poor woman was at the end of her rope. And I got from working with him, the gift of freedom. I mean, I got rid of almost all the accumulated stress and trauma and fear and self-doubt and stuff that was spiritual from ancestors. I mean, the crazy stuff that I didn't even believe was true and wouldn't believe if I hadn't experienced it myself. And I got rid of all that. And what do I get? The reward is I get to be me. I get access to me. I get to be really in alignment with who I am rather than to be dealing with all the stuff that we accumulate while living in life. So that is an amazing gift. And I want folks to know about it who are interested in that and achieving something similar. So you can't do that without being transparent, without being open. I mean, it's just not possible.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Monetary Metals. This is a company I've been using for a year or two, and it's fantastic. Now, if you're like me, you probably own some gold. But also, if you're like me, wherever you have that gold stored, it's probably just sitting there, not really doing much for you. If anything, it might be racking up storage fees so that over time you wind up with less rather than more. But what if you could put that gold to work for you? I mean, what if you could get it to do something for you? And that's exactly what Monetary Metals is all about. You can grow your gold year after year with Monetary Metals, which offers interest on gold paid in more ounces of physical gold. You can earn 2 to 5% on gold and silver in their leasing program, which supports qualified gold-using businesses. And if you're an accredited investor, you can earn higher returns, think double digits, in their gold bond offerings. All the interest is paid in physical ounces of gold, so your total ounces grow and compound year after year. So over a 10-year period, for example, 2.5% annual, 100 ounces becomes 128. At 3%, 100 ounces becomes 134. At 4%, 100 ounces becomes 148. You get the idea. They've been at this for 7 years. Jeff Deist, formerly of the Mises Institute, recently joined forces with them. Their vice president of relationships, Addison Quayle, has been at my house. He's been a friend of the Tom Woods Show. I've seen him at conferences all over the place. These are our people, and they're doing something really, really creative and important. So start saving and earning in gold. Go to monetary-metals.com/woods to learn more about how to get started with your account. Don't forget the hyphen. That's monetary-metals.com/woods. I'm jumping around from one thing to another just because I wanted to talk to you forever, and now I have a million things I want to ask. It's interesting the way COVID was, of course, politicized through the whole thing, but almost every aspect of it was politicized, like masks. I could almost guess what your political views were based on whether you were wearing a mask. There's no reason for that. Like, these things don't necessarily have anything to do with each other. Well, likewise, where you stand on the issue of long COVID, I can almost figure out what your political views are. And there's no reason that should be the case. But having said that, what is your understanding based on the latest information you're getting on the reality of long COVID or how prevalent it is?
So first, I want to say I totally agree with you. It is a damn shame that how people feel about things that are not, that are objective, right? Things that are measurable is such a strong predictor of their political leanings. It's a real tragedy. So my sense is that, and just, it's interesting because a challenge with long COVID is that just what you said, right? So there's so much investment, and I'm not talking about financial investment. I'm talking about human capital. Like, literally, people have tethered their self-identities, their identities, their conception of themselves to an outcome, right? Like believing in long COVID or not believing in it. There's just so much investment that it makes it really hard to make sense of the science. And indeed, the science is poor. And there's some forgiveness that should be allowed for that, considering that we're investigating a new phenomenon. But at the same time, there's been a lot of time and there are a lot of good scientists. So we could have done better if we didn't have so much of that intertwining or that so much of that investment, emotional and identity investment in a certain definition and achieving a certain outcome. My sense is that they're absolutely, and I don't even care about the name. I guess we can use the name, but I actually want to talk about a syndrome because the name is the politics together. It's just hard to separate. But my sense is that absolutely there are individuals who deal with chronic problems that are absolutely debilitating to them in the worst case scenarios because of the infection. Like, that's totally the case. One of the things that I learned when I worked with Christopher Maher, because of course on the right, there's criticism that it's not real or that it's in your mind or something like that. Sometimes there's criticism of it. And the truth is that everything that is in the mind is real. And everything that's in the body is also in the mind. It's all connected. And what I mean by that is that truly, it's really something that I didn't appreciate until I worked with Christopher Maher. It literally is all connected. Everything is connected. Every part of our being, our physical being, our mental being, our emotional being, our spiritual being, our energetic being. It's all connected and every component is real. So it's totally a phenomenon. There are definitely people who are suffering because of it, unfortunately. And we need better science here. And it's just hard to do good science, again, when the politics is so intertwined. I mean, it's a shame. It serves no one.
I hesitate to bring personalities into this. So if you resolutely refuse to answer this question, I understand completely. But what is your opinion of Jerome Adams, who was Surgeon General under Trump? Am I getting you in trouble?
I'll tell you, honestly, I feel sad for him. And I feel sad for him because it's not hard to see that. And I should add that this is one of the things that one of the benefits from my experience, like working with Chris Vermeer and shedding tons of stress and my past history and ancestral stuff and all this other stuff, is that not only does it help me be more in touch with myself, but it also gives me more access to the gifts that God gives all of us to different degrees. Like, we all have different blessings. My wife is, her intuition is off the chart. It's like something that doesn't even seem to exist on, should exist in the physical world. For me, watching Dr. Adams, it's easy to see that unfortunately, he carries a lot of sadness and he also carries a lot of insignificance and really wants to feel significant. And he's not alone in that. I have some of that also. That's something that I work on personally too. And he also has a lot of confusion. And sometimes how that came to be is history. Obviously, I don't know what those details, but I honestly, he is a gentleman that I feel some degree of sadness for.
Well, one thing that surprised me, I mean, I don't, this isn't necessarily a negative, it's just somewhat odd, is that he was the Surgeon General of the United States, and I'm some guy. Okay, I have some credentials, but they're not in medicine. And I was posting something on Twitter. Maybe you remember this. I don't remember how many months ago it was, but we went through a brief phase where some of the public health messaging was telling us that COVID was a top five killer of children. We all knew that was false, right? Anybody remotely following this knew that had to be false. So how could anybody in public health have believed it for a minute? Well, Kelly Croner from Georgia, who's just a lay woman, she, like me, has no particular expertise in this area, but she can read data, she can look at charts, and she showed that this was all wet and they had to withdraw it. So I was talking about that on Twitter, and Jerome Adams intervenes in my thread and starts talking to me. And I know, again, if that's not a bad thing, I'm glad I can talk to the Surgeon General. That just seems a little bit odd that he would feel the need to jump in there. But I, on the other hand, I got the opportunity to tell him, if you want to know why people don't trust public health, it's things like this and telling us we have to listen to the experts when they're all telling us things that we know are false and it took some lay woman to refute it.
That was, Kelly's awesome. She's great. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it comes back to one of the challenges. I mean, it's a challenge of life for all of us. It's like, for him, and for, I mean, not just him, you know, the problem is the stress, and we all carry it, right? We carry tons of it. When we carry it, it distorts everything about us, and it doesn't feel that way. It feels like everything's fine, or maybe it doesn't for some people, but for most everyone, it distorts their relationship, like their authentic relationship with everything around them. In his case, like many of my colleagues, certainly the ones that get interviewed on television all the time, the consequence is that it becomes hard, if not impossible, for people to be able to take things in from a place of neutrality rather than investment. I mean, talk about invested. He's not the only one, but oh my gosh. I mean, he's so invested in seeing a certain outcome or having a certain belief system be true that everything gets twisted and turned, consciously or not, to try and make that fit, to fit that mold. And then you get crazy stuff like whatever he was saying to you, and you get very smart MDs and PhDs you can't see simple data and reach a rational conclusion. Like, no, it makes no sense to be injecting healthy young people with a new vaccine, which for a fact, we know we will learn more about its safety. And that news, I mean, the things we learn later are, there's going to be bad news. That's how it is. And so I think that's funny. And Kelly's awesome.
Given that we have an office of the Surgeon General at the federal level, why do we need state-level Surgeon General? What do they do that's different?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, very different roles. So for one, I'm here responsible for Floridians, the health of Floridians, and I also am the head of the Department of Health. So we have a Florida-specific, very large public health program. We're talking everything from early intervention programs for kids who aren't, say, talking or crawling or walking on time, you know, little babies, to nutritional support programs for moms, to programs that inspect swimming pools, to programs that will help do contact tracing after outbreaks. We have a very vast portfolio, and I oversee it as the head. And of course, we have amazing teams here, really dedicated men and women here in the Department of Health, who, I mean, very, very beautifully committed to really improving the health of Floridians. So we have a very Florida-focused program, and we design our policies and programs for the needs of the people of Florida. On the other hand, of course, the Surgeon General of the state provides broader guidance, not so much state-to-state issues, but even though some of the comments and recommendations from the Surgeon General of the country would have implications for individual states, but very different agenda. And certainly right now, very, very different in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. You're at loggerheads with each other in a way. So, all right, I'm going to ask you a totally unfair question that there's no way you can answer it. If there ever were to be a President Ron DeSantis, any chance you're getting the big job?
We got to ask the governor. I don't know. Maybe I can call the staff and have them contact him after we talk.
Well, you know, one of the things that really did impress me during all this was that it wasn't just that Ron DeSantis was reactionary and he's just going to do the opposite of what other people are doing. He was really informed. I mean, I was a nerd who obsessed over this stuff and I read everything I could read. And then I would listen to him and he would just be citing, he'd say, oh, well, we already knew from the contact tracing study in Iceland about, you know, the schools were not going to be a problem. And he just knew these things off the top of his head so that when he would have a roundtable with Jay Bhattacharya, Martin Kulldorff, and some of these familiar names, he could hold his own because he knew the papers. He wasn't just a stuffed shirt. And I found that deeply impressive. And that's how Jay Bhattacharya feels too.
Absolutely. I mean, Governor DeSantis totally deserves credit for that. I mean, it's remarkable. He's an extremely hard worker. That is obviously to his benefit. That's definitely a characteristic of his, very ingrained characteristic. And yeah, he cares deeply. He wants to do a good job. And he cared deeply about that during the pandemic. And you cannot do a good job in a time of uncertainty if you don't know the data. And he really leaned into it. And for the benefit of Floridians, right? I mean, imagine the kind of pushback, the kind of headwinds that he was facing to be able to do that. You've got to know your fill in the blank. You know, you got to know your stuff. And he did. And he knew that's what it would take to do it. And he did it. He surrounded himself with, fortunately, very trustworthy physicians and scientists like Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, like Martin Kulldorff, who are okay with whatever the truth is, whether that truth is in agreement or not in agreement with their outlook for the world. On the other side of the debate, you got your people like your, you know, Dr. Adams and my colleagues, a lot of the faculty at UCLA that was more outspoken. I mean, I had some support too, but you've got these other smart people who, unfortunately, the truth is only truth and it's only good enough if it aligns with their outlook for the world. And that's not a fun environment to, if you're not like that, then you don't want to be around that kind of environment.
Isn't it incredible that YouTube took down at least one of those roundtables? And at the time, I wrote in my newsletter that apparently the principal YouTube is operating under is that it should be kept secret how experts are advising an American governor. We should not know how a governor is being advised. That's in effect the result, is that the governor is being advised by experts, and because the video has been taken down, we're not allowed to know how they're advising him. Oh, that's great.
Add that to the list of just completely perverse things that happened during the pandemic. It's just another unbelievable thing that all the hysteria and fear that the media and political leaders pumped into the bloodstreams of people, it just permitted it to happen. Just another completely perverse, upside down thing that could never have happened without, unfortunately, the media and political leaders being successful in just pumping all that fear into people's blood.
Did you manage to avoid being suppressed by big tech?
I did. Well, I mostly did, I guess. So early on, Dr. Simone Gold is a dear friend of me and my wife's and her partner, John, and she's a dear friend. And early on in the pandemic, I think in the summer or so, late summer of 2020, I'd written a handful of articles for the Wall Street Journal, just really simple messages. Stop the shutdowns are very harmful. We need to think about risks and benefits. The mask data is not so good. Simple stuff, but that resonated with some people. She invited me and others to the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., and that video was shut down. They took that video, which was really popular with the American Frontline Doctors group. They pulled that video down. I think other than that, I wasn't overtly censored, to the best of my knowledge, before I came into this position. And then we put out some guidance after an epidemiological study that we did here in Florida that showed a signal for increased cardiac mortality in young men after mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. And I was, at that time, censored on Twitter and later, I guess, reinstated or something like that. Mostly haven't been. Not like Dr. Bhattacharya, where President Biden is busy, or his officials are busy trying to figure out how to muzzle him.
Yeah, crazy. Well, there is, I think in the case of that video, I think Dr. Gold kind of put a target on herself. It's like no matter what video she's in, they want to go after that. And you have a whole chapter on her in your book, which took some courage to stand up for your friend because she's not popular in influential circles.
Yeah, well, this is a time where if you are popular in influential circles, you're definitely doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And you're not doing the thing that is serving humanity, right? She, super incredibly devoted to freedom is an idea and a reality. Governor Ron DeSantis, same thing. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, incredibly devoted to liberty and truth and science. So, yeah, this is definitely a time where if you are popular in the mainstream, you are not actually bringing value to human civilization.
Well, I urge people to check out your book, Transcend Fear, A Blueprint for Mindful Leadership in Public Health. Public health, of course, has been tremendously damaged over the past few years, so I don't know exactly where it goes from here, but if public health means giving the kinds of recommendations and guidance that you gave, which was the kind of common sense stuff we needed people to say, then I'm all for it. Unfortunately, yeah. I'm not sure that's the direction that it generally has been tending in, but you have done something very significant. Out of the 50 state surgeon generals, I would suspect you're the only one anybody's ever heard of. That's my guess.
Yeah, that may be the case. And hopefully we're not done yet, so.
Well, I appreciate your time so much. I can't imagine how busy you are. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free. And we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.